Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something really crucial. Think about the really big problems we're facing, like climate change or how we're going to move around in the future. Mm-hmm. It often feels like we're trying to solve these massive tangled issues by fixing one small thing at a time. Mm-hmm. But what if the key isn't just better individual solutions, but understanding how all those pieces connect?
That's exactly it. That's the crucial shift we need. The old way of tackling things, designing a better engine, a more efficient solar panel, you know, in isolation, it's hitting its limits.
Right.
The future demands we look at the bigger picture. How do these individual systems work together to create entirely new capabilities? It's not just about a faster plane. It's about a completely reimagined air travel experience, potentially.
And that's where this idea of a system of systems, or SOAS, comes in. We've been digging into some fascinating work happening in Europe, specifically a research project with a bit of a mouthful of a name, Colossus. We mentioned the name, but it's actually an acronym, isn't it? Quite a long one.
It is. Stands for Collaborative System of Systems Exploration of Aviation Products, Services, and Business Models.
Okay, but that title pretty much sums it up, right? Collaborative System of Systems, Aviation Products, Services, and Business Models.
It really does hit all the key points.
This is serious stuff, funded by the EU's Horizon Europe program, which tackles some of the biggest research challenges out there.
Exactly. And for this deep dive, our mission really is to unpack the unique way Colossus is approaching the challenge of modeling these incredibly complex SOCISes, particularly when it comes to creating innovative solutions in aviation.
Okay.
What's really clever about their method, I think, is how they aim to get a comprehensive understanding of all the moving parts without getting so lost in the weeds that actual analysis becomes impossible.
Finding that sweet spot.
It's about finding that sweet spot between seeing the whole forest and still being able to count the important trees, if you like.
Right. And this isn't just theory, is it? Colossus is actually using this methodology on real-world problems they call use cases. Mm. We'll definitely need to get into those to see how this all translates into something tangible.
We will.
So let's start with the fundamental question. Mm-hmm. Why is this new perspective even necessary? Why can't we just keep improving individual systems the way we always have?
Well, the reality is that almost nothing operates in isolation anymore. Think about how interconnected our world has become.
Mm.
Air travel, for instance, it isn't just the aircraft. It's air traffic control, airport logistics, baggage handling, security, even your ride to the airport. All these separate systems have to work together seamlessly.
Right.
To achieve the capability of getting you from one city to another safely and ideally on time, no single part of that chain can do it alone.
Okay, let's unpack this. System of systems. This isn't just a random collection of things. It's a purposeful collection where the magic happens in how they interact and collaborate.
Exactly.
To deliver a capability that's bigger than the sum of their parts. Like that air travel example.
Mm-hmm.
A super efficient airplane still needs the rest of the infrastructure to actually get you anywhere.
Precisely. And this kind of interconnectedness offers some really powerful advantages. It can lead to greater efficiency by leveraging the strengths of each component, better scalability as your needs grow, increased adaptability to unexpected situations, and even enhanced resilience, because if one part falters, the overall functionality might be distributed enough to keep things running. Think of the internet as a massive SOS. If one server goes down, the whole thing doesn't collapse.
That makes sense in theory, but it also sounds like, well, a logistical nightmare to manage. If you're dealing with so many moving pieces and connections, how do you even begin to design or analyze something like that effectively?
You've hit on the core challenge, and that's where the field of system of systems comes in. It's a field that specifically grapples with the unique complexities of these large-scale interconnected systems.
That's
the sheer scope is much broader, the way things integrate is far more intricate, and there's often a significant amount of uncertainty involved, a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah.
Plus, you get these emergent behaviors, surprising things the whole system does that you wouldn't necessarily predict by looking at each individual component.
Like a flock of birds.
Exactly. Think of a flock of birds moving in unison. No single bird is directing the whole formation. And quite often, the goals and requirements for an SOS can be much more fluid and less clearly defined than when you're designing a single contained system.
Right. You can't just write a neat list of exactly what the whole sprawling thing needs to do from day one. It sounds like trying to manage a constantly evolving organism almost.
Exactly. And that's why current SOAS methods and the tools we have still have limitations. Many of them are adapted from traditional systems engineering approaches, which, while incredibly useful for designing individual systems, don't fully address the unique challenges of SOSs.
They weren't built for it.
Not quite. Others attempt to apply complex mathematical techniques, but there's still a real need for established best practices and methodologies specifically tailored for this level of complexity. Often, approaches are adapted from, say, traditional systems engineering, or maybe from something called MDO, multidisciplinary analysis and optimization.
MDO. That sounds technical.
It is. It involves bringing experts from different fields together, aerodynamics, structures, software, whatever, and using complex computer models to find the best overall design when lots of factors are interacting. But applying that to the even bigger scale of SOAS is tricky.
So this brings us right back to Colossus. They saw these limitations and set out to develop a more targeted and hopefully effective approach for designing innovative aviation products specifically within this complex SOCRS environment.
That's right. The central aim of Colossus is to create a system of systems design methodology that, crucially, allows for the combined optimization of not just the aircraft themselves, but also how they operate within the broader aviation ecosystem and the underlying business models that make it all work. Their ultimate goal is to really transform how future European aviation products and services are conceived and designed by taking a truly integrated view from the very beginning. They aim to develop a design methodology, a way of working, that lets them optimize everything together. Not just the aircraft tech itself,
right,
but also how those aircraft are operated in the real world, and crucially, the business models that have to underpin it all to make it viable.
Wow. Okay, so technology, operations, business, all optimized at the same time.
That's the goal.
And this isn't just an academic exercise, is it? They're trying to tackle some pretty significant real-world issues that are shaping the future.
Absolutely. Colossus is aiming to overcome the obstacles that researchers and the aviation industry face when trying to create innovations that align with crucial regulations and policy directions. You know, think about the European Green Deal.
Huge driver.
And the new industrial strategy for Europe. These are setting the course for future development. And we're seeing similar ambitious initiatives in other parts of the world, like the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act, which has a strong focus on clean energy and climate solutions.
Aviation in particular seems to be under intense scrutiny when it comes to climate change. It's not exactly a sector where you can implement quick, easy fixes, is it?
Precisely. Many of the more obvious solutions have already been explored. What's needed now are truly revolutionary, game-changing concepts.
Okay.
But these have to be developed with a deep understanding of the entire system to ensure that the intended benefits actually materialize and aren't undermined by unintended negative consequences or ripple effects across the larger network. You fix one thing, break another.
Right. Avoid the whack-a-mole problem.
Mm-hmm.
So how exactly is Colossus trying to achieve this? What's the framework they're building to make this holistic approach a reality?
They're developing what they call the Transformative Digital Collaborative, or TDC, framework. And this isn't starting from a blank slate. It's actually building on the Agile framework, which came out of a previous Horizon 2020 project. Think of Agile as a really effective and flexible way to design complex things collaboratively.
I've heard of Agile.
And it's already gained significant recognition in the aircraft industry, both in Europe and internationally, for its ability to handle multidisciplinary design and optimization.
So they're taking a successful approach used for designing individual complex aircraft and expanding its capabilities to handle the even greater complexities of a full system of systems. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a really efficient strategy.
It is. The Agile framework already has the power to design, analyze, and optimize very intricate aircraft concepts while considering a wide range of technical and environmental factors.
Mm-hmm.
So extending it to incorporate SOAS capabilities specifically for the aviation industry is seen as a relatively smart way to leverage existing knowledge and create this powerful TDC framework.
Okay, so the TDC framework is the toolkit, but what's the core philosophy or guiding principle behind the Colossus approach to actually setting up and analyzing SOAS within this framework?
The fundamental idea is to have a really structured method for defining SOAS that's comprehensive enough to capture all the essential complexity, but also streamlined enough to allow for practical and efficient analysis.
Right. Usable.
Exactly. And at the heart of the Colossus approach is the idea of being heavily stakeholder-centered.
Stakeholder-centered. Okay.
This means that the entire SOAS design design process revolves around understanding the goals, the actions, and the reactions of all the different parties who are involved in or affected by the system within its real-world operating environment.
So the very first step is figuring out who has a vested interest in the system and what their perspective is, like who actually cares.
Exactly. Skin in the game. By systematically identifying every relevant stakeholder and examining how they interact with this OS, you gain a multitude of different viewpoints, which is absolutely crucial for getting a truly holistic understanding.
Makes sense.
And importantly, by considering the often competing interests of these different stakeholders, it helps to clarify the overarching core values and to focus on what's truly essential for the OS to achieve its purpose.
And these stakeholders aren't just abstract groups, right? They often represent actual working systems within the broader SOAS.
Precisely. Each stakeholder often represents at least one system that's being considered, and in many cases, these are the actual constituent systems that come together to form the larger SOAS.
Okay.
The focus then becomes optimizing how these constituent systems collaborate and coordinate their actions so that the overall SOAS can deliver capabilities that no single system could achieve on its own.
So instead of just trying to make each individual airplane or air traffic control system as efficient as possible in isolation.
Right.
They're looking at how they can work together in the most effective way.
That's a key difference from traditional systems engineering. The SOAS view places a stronger emphasis on the capabilities the system needs to deliver, rather than being solely focused on meeting a fixed set of rigid technical requirements.
Capabilities over requirements.
Yes. The goal is to create a system that can adapt and continue to deliver the desired outcomes, even as circumstances change, rather than just ticking boxes against a static list of specifications. Think of it like designing a flexible transportation system rather than just a faster car.
That makes a lot of sense, especially when you consider the long lifespans and the constantly evolving nature of many of these large-scale systems. Now, the research paper mentions two key challenges in SOAS product design that go beyond what traditional systems engineering typically deals with. What are those?
Right. The first one is the crucial need to investigate and really understand additional domains that might significantly impact the SOAS. It's not just the technical details.
The engineering bits.
Exactly. Not just the engineering bits of the aircraft or the air traffic management system. It could involve understanding economic trends, social behaviors, evolving regulatory landscapes. A much broader set of factors needs to be brought into the equation.
Okay, so looking beyond just the technical nuts and bolts of the technology itself to see the wider context, and what's the second key challenge?
The second is the challenge of dealing with what they call softer or sometimes fuzzier non-technical design parameters that often come with a higher degree of uncertainty.
Fuzzier, like what?
Things like understanding and predicting user preferences, gauging societal acceptance of new technologies, anticipating shifts in political will. These are much harder to quantify and predict than, say, the aerodynamic performance of an aircraft wing.
Sure.
But they can be just as critical to the ultimate success or failure of an SOAS.
Right. You could build the most technologically advanced and efficient aircraft in the world, but if nobody wants to fly in it, or if new regulations prevent its operation, then it's ultimately not a viable solution. Dead on arrival.
Exactly. So to address these unique challenges and provide a structured way forward, Colossus employs a 5-level hierarchy for thinking about holistic product development.
5 levels. Okay, let's break those down. What does each level represent?
Okay, the first and highest level is business models. This level represents the overarching needs and the different interests of all the stakeholders involved.
Level 1, business. Got it.
Level 2 is the system of systems itself, focusing on the overall capabilities that the SOAS as a whole needs to deliver.
Level 2, capabilities.
Below that, level 3 is the design space for the constituent systems, which includes the specific system or product you might be direct or developing.
Level 3, the actual systems inside.
Right. Then level 4 is the multidisciplinary subsystem level, where you delve into the various engineering disciplines and technical details within each constituent system, the real nuts and bolts.
Level 4, subsystems. The details.
And finally, at level V, the most granular level, are the specific technologies that will be employed.
Level V technologies.
Okay.
5 levels. So it's a top-down way of looking at the problem, starting with the high-level needs of everyone involved, and then systematically drilling down to specific technologies being used.
Precisely. And Colossus uses a guiding principle they call sequential focus navigation to move efficiently between these different levels.
Sequential focus navigation.
The idea is that you can address changes or modifications at any one level of the hierarchy and then see the corresponding effects ripple through all the other connected levels.
Ah, okay, so it connects up and down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This allows for a more intuitive and manageable way to navigate the inherent complexity of designing in SOAS. So it's not about getting bogged down in the technical details before you even understand the broader business case or the stakeholder needs.
That makes sense. It's interesting that they specifically point out that this kind of SOAS analysis isn't just traditional market research, but that it can certainly provide valuable insights to inform market research efforts.
That's a really important distinction. While traditional market research might give you a snapshot of current consumer preferences or potential market demands, and SOAS analysis allows you to explore a much broader design space and evaluate the potential of entirely new SOAS architectures, including those that are enabled by novel and maybe yet to be fully understood technologies. The insights gained from a comprehensive SOAS analysis can then provide a much more informed basis for targeted market research efforts later on.
Now, to make this all a bit more concrete and less abstract, let's talk about the use cases you mentioned earlier. Colossus has developed two of them, right? Adam and Eve.
Yes, Adam and Eve. The primary purpose of these use cases is to provide real-world scenarios that support the development, the testing, the assessment, and the demonstration of advanced SOAS capabilities within aviation research and technology development.
So they're test beds, essentially.
Kind of, yeah. They're carefully designed to ensure that these complex, multi-level SOASs can be set up, analyzed, and evaluated in a way that is both comprehensive and practically efficient.
Let's start with Adam. What's the core focus of that use case?
Okay, Adam stands for Advanced Air Mobility. This use case centers around creating viable business models for innovative aircraft concepts, specifically electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, those eVTOLs, you say.
The flying taxis.
The flying taxis, exactly, and also seaplanes. The fundamental idea is to explore the potential for sustainable intermodal mobility.
Intermodal.
Meaning how these new types of aircraft can effectively integrate with other existing forms of transportation, trains, cars, buses, to create seamless travel experiences.
Okay.
The key evaluation criteria for Adam include the overall performance of these integrated mobility solutions, their economic competitiveness, their environmental impact, and their total life cycle footprint.
So Adam is really looking at how these emerging aircraft technologies can unlock new possibilities for how people move around, with a strong emphasis on sustainability. And Adam follows a product push strategy. What exactly does that entail?
Right. A product push strategy is a development approach where the initial impetus for innovation comes from the availability of a new technology.
Technology first.
Yeah, tech first. In the case of Adam, the recent advancements in electric propulsion technology, for example, have made the development of eVTOL aircraft feasible. The focus then shifts to exploring potential new products and services, and ultimately the underlying business models that can effectively leverage these new technological capabilities.
To address needs, existing or maybe new ones.
Exactly, to address existing or emerging societal needs.
Yeah, that makes sense. The new technology comes first, and then the focus is on figuring out how it can be best utilized and what kind of business can be built around it. Now, what about the second use case, EVE? What's its focus?
EVE stands for Eco-Friendly Air Vehicles for Multiple Operating Environments. This use case takes a different strategic direction. It focuses on developing a comprehensive and rapid response system for combating wildfires.
Wildfires, very relevant.
Utilizing not only novel aircraft designs, but also incorporating advanced automation, artificial intelligence, and digital technologies.
Wildfire fighting, that's a really critical and increasingly relevant societal need. And the paper says that EVE follows a product pull strategy. How does that contrast with the product push approach of Adam?
Well, in a product pull strategy, the driving force behind product development is an actual, clearly identified demand or societal need for a solution.
Need first.
Need first. In the case of EVE, the growing threat and devastating impact of wildfires create a very clear and urgent societal need for more effective and environmentally responsible firefighting capabilities.
Absolutely.
The development process then starts by deeply understanding the specific need and then pulls the development of relevant new services and products, potentially including the application of new or advanced technologies, to effectively address that need.
So with EVE, problem comes first, the urgent need for better ways to fight wildfires, and then the exploration focuses on what technologies and integrated systems can be developed and deployed to meet that need. It's almost the reverse of the technology-first approach of Adam.
Precisely. While ADAM could be characterized as a more bottom-up approach, starting with technological possibilities, ED is more top-down, starting with a pressing societal need.
Interesting.
However, it's important to note that the Colossus framework is specifically designed to be flexible and adaptable enough to effectively handle both of these strategic approaches in a cohesive and integrated manner. It's not either.
Now, within each of these use cases, they utilize scenarios. Mm-hmm. What role do these scenarios play in the Colossus methodology? They sound important.
Scenarios are absolutely fundamental. They provide a detailed, reality-based description of a specific event or situation that directly addresses one or more of the identified stakeholder needs.
Like a specific story.
Kind of, yeah. For each use case, multiple diverse scenarios are carefully developed to ensure that all the relevant stakeholders and their varied needs are adequately considered and explored. These scenarios then serve as the crucial foundation for understanding the operational requirements of this OS, and also for rigorously verifying and validating the effectiveness of the proposed solutions through analysis, simulation, maybe even testing.
So they're like specific test cases that are firmly rooted in realistic situations that the SOAS might encounter. Like, what happens if this happens?
Exactly. And it's crucial that these scenarios are designed to be impartial, meaning they don't inherently favor or presuppose any particular technological solution, solution agnostic.
Why is that important?
Well, this neutrality helps to encourage the exploration of truly innovative and novel ideas, rather than being constrained by existing approaches or preconceived notions about what should work.
Got it. And then we have concepts of operations. How do those fit into this picture?
Okay. ConOp is a detailed description of how a specific objective or overall purpose is intended to be achieved through the implementation of a particular solution. It lays out the step-by-step sequence of actions. Within the Colossus framework, the ConOp play a vital role in defining the top-level requirements for the individual constituent systems that will ultimately need to be designed. With a product pull approach like EV, the emphasis is often on exploring different system compositions and operational configurations to effectively meet the clearly defined needs. Whereas with a product push approach like ADAM, the analysis might be more focused on understanding how a new technology or system can be seamlessly integrated into existing or entirely new SOAS architectures and what novel capabilities that integration ultimately enables.
The paper highlights that the wildfire use case, E, will be used to illustrate the Colossus methodology in more detail. So let's really dig into that step-by-step process now, see how it all comes together in a practical example.
Okay, sounds good. The Colossus methodology, as they outline it, is fundamentally a capability-focused and stakeholder-centric process. It's about taking a real-world problem and systematically breaking it down into a corresponding and manageable SOAS model.
And the first objective they emphasize is identifying the real questions. That sounds almost too simple, but I imagine it's quite crucial.
It is deceptively simple, but absolutely critical. They actually quote Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, who said, "Perfection is achieved not when there is nothing more to add, but when there is nothing left to take away."
Elegant.
The core idea here is that an effective SOAS model shouldn't try to explain every single detail about the world. Its primary purpose is to investigate the specific system of interest within a realistic environment and, in a well-balanced way, understand how the operation of that system will impact the world around it.
So it's about consciously avoiding the trap of getting lost in a sea of irrelevant details and instead focusing sharply on what truly matters for the purpose of your analysis.
Exactly. It's a common pitfall to see an excessive amount of intricate detail in the internal technical aspects of a model, while not giving enough consideration to the external factors, the other actors involved, the broader connections.
Okay.
The stakeholder-centered approach is specifically designed to ensure a much better balance at the overall SOAS level.
The second key objective is getting answers fast. Why is speed such an important factor in this type of analysis?
Because, according to Colossus, the primary application of this kind of SOAS analysis is in the very early conceptual design phase of a project.
Way upstream.
At this stage, the main goal is to rapidly explore the potential design space and investigate the possible operational capabilities that a new technology, product, or service might offer. It's about providing timely information.
Quick feedback loops.
to inform crucial early decisions regarding market potential, viable operating modes, potential for compliance with relevant regulations, things like that. If the analysis process is too slow or too cumbersome, it won't be practically effective for this critical early stage decision making.
Okay, so it's about enabling rapid exploration of possibilities and making informed choices early in the development cycle before you commit too many resources. The third objective is evolving the SOS. What does that involve? Sounds dynamic.
This objective acknowledges that SOS design is often not a linear process, but rather an iterative one. The initial SOS model you create might be intentionally lean and relatively simple, focusing on the core
So
aspects.
start simple.
Start simple, but as the project progresses, your understanding deepens, new information becomes available. The model needs to have the inherent ability to evolve and grow in complexity.
Adapt.
Yes, adapt. This means being able to add new systems, incorporate more detailed interactions, and refine the existing interconnections in an agile and manageable way. The way the SOS is initially defined and modeled should explicitly allow for this kind of evolutionary development.
Start with a simplified view to grasp the big picture, and then progressively add layers of complexity and detail as your understanding matures. That makes perfect sense. And the final objective is transparency and inclusivity. Why are those so important in the context of SOAS design?
Because the design and development of a system of systems is almost always a collaborative effort involving many different people from various disciplines and often from different organizations. It's a team sport.
Right.
For the SOAS to be truly successful, every member of the team needs to have a fundamental understanding of the basic composition of the SOAS and, crucially, how their individual work and contributions relate to the overall functioning of the entire system.
Seeing the whole board.
Exactly. This shared situational awareness is absolutely critical for fostering effective collaboration, ensuring that everyone is working towards the same overarching goals, and for understanding the relevance and impact of individual contributions on the larger system.
Okay, so those are the four key objectives that guide the Colossus methodology. Find the real questions, get answers fast, allow evolution, and ensure transparency. Now, let's get into the actual steps. Step one is the use case, which we've already discussed as defining the what, how, where, and who of the SOS in a specific scenario.
Exactly. The use case provides that clear, understandable description of how potential users might interact within a defined environment, the environment established by the SOS being investigated. It clarifies the goals, boundaries, constraints, operators, interactions.
The playing field.
The playing field, yes. And, as we mentioned, it's instrumental in identifying all the relevant stakeholders. Which leads us to step two.
Step two is the identification of the stakeholders themselves. We've talked about distinguishing between primary stakeholders who are actively engaged and secondary stakeholders who are affected or can influence the endeavor. Why is it so critical to identify this broad spectrum of stakeholders? Seems like a lot of work.
It can be, but it's crucial because complex systems, especially SOAS, invariably involve a multitude of stakeholders. They bring diverse interests, different levels of expertise, varying degrees of influence. By systematically identifying this entire ecosystem of stakeholders, you develop a much richer, more robust understanding of the intricate interconnections, the dependencies, the potential areas of influence, and the possible positive or negative effects the SOAS might have.
Avoid blind spots.
Exactly. Failing to identify even a seemingly minor stakeholder could lead to unforeseen challenges down the line. You just don't know.
Step three is understanding the needs. Each stakeholder has specific needs or stakes in the SOS environment, and these underlying needs are what ultimately drive their behavior and shape their interactions with the system. And as you pointed out earlier, these needs can sometimes be in direct conflict.
Absolutely. For example, the operational needs of an airline focused on maximizing efficiency and profitability might sometimes clash with the needs of passengers who are primarily looking for the lowest possible ticket price. Understanding these potentially conflicting needs right from the outset is crucial because they fundamentally define how different stakeholders will interact with and exert influence on the SOS as conditions change.
Step four is defining the key value indicators, or KVIs. These sound important. They're the all-important quantifiable metrics that help translate those diverse stakeholder needs into measurable terms.
Right.
And provide a way to assess the overall performance and effectiveness of the SOS. How do you even begin to figure out what these KVIs should be? That seems tricky.
It is a truly critical step. The careful selection of appropriate KVIs is key. They need to be thoughtfully chosen so that they logically connect the various stakeholders through their core interests and provide objective, measurable ways to evaluate this OS from a comprehensive, overarching perspective.
So they bridge the gap.
They bridge the gap. Ultimately, the KVIs should clearly demonstrate the benefits or potential disadvantages that a particular constituent system brings to the relevant stakeholders within the broader context of the overall SOAS.
So instead of just measuring the performance of an individual aircraft in isolation, based on something like its fuel efficiency,
the traditional way,
a relevant KDI in a SOAS context might look at something like the total end-to-end travel time for a passenger using a new intermodal transportation system that includes that aircraft as one component.
That's an excellent example. It perfectly illustrates the shift in focus from the performance of an individual system in isolation to the overall outcome and value delivered to the stakeholder within the larger interconnected system. Much more meaningful.
Okay. Step five then involves defining global variables and value functions. How do these build upon the foundation laid by the KVIs?
Right. So the KVIs, along with an understanding of their interrelationships, are then used to define the key global variables of the SOAS and to identify the necessary interfaces that will connect to the various design and analysis components within the broader framework.
Okay, making the connector.
Yes. Now, translating these KVIs, especially when they represent non-technical values or qualitative aspects, into quantifiable global variables can be a significant challenge. How do you measure societal acceptance?
Yeah, how do you measure that?
Well, the Colossus approach specifically emphasizes the importance of moving beyond purely monetary values and adapting the units of measurement to the specific problem. They give examples like using participatory evaluation techniques for assessing mobility solutions, or considering the often non-monetary values of ecosystem services in environmental contexts. You have to get creative but rigorous.
So it's about finding appropriate and meaningful ways to quantify things that aren't traditionally measured in simple financial terms. And then these global variables are used to construct the value functions.
Exactly. Value functions are essentially quantifiable mathematical expressions that allow you to collectively evaluate the defined scenario objectives, the often competing stakeholder needs, and the chosen key value indicators.
So they roll everything up.
They roll it all up. Mm. They provide a mechanism to obtain overall assessment of the relative merit of different potential SOAS configurations and operational strategies. How good is this option versus that one, considering everything?
Step six in the methodology is defining the top-level modules. What do these modules represent within the SOAS model?
These top-level modules serve as representations of the behavior of complex constituent system models. Think of them as placeholders, maybe, or interfaces. Mm. They can also act as connection points to more detailed, higher-fidelity models or specific subsystems that reside within the broader transformative digital collaborative framework. This is essentially where the more detailed engineering and design of the specific innovations happens at a more granular technical level.
Connecting the big picture to the details. And finally, step seven is the crucial step of SOAS exploration of use cases. This is where the defined SOAS architecture is actually put to work in the context of the scenarios, right? Where the rubber meets the road.
Precisely. The complete SOAS architecture, carefully defined through the preceding steps, is now utilized to thoroughly explore the design space presented by the various use case scenarios.
And the concepts of operations come back here?
Yes, the concepts of operations, the CONOP, come into play here by clearly describing how the intended capabilities of the new product or service will be practically employed and how they directly connect with all the relevant stakeholders. Each stakeholder can then, in turn, evaluate how these new capabilities ultimately affect their individual business model, whether that refers to a traditional financial business model or simply their broader interests and underlying needs. Does it work for them?
Okay, that's a comprehensive breakdown of the seven-step methodology. Now let's see how this all comes together in the specific context of the wildfire use case EVE, which you mentioned follows a product pull paradigm driven by a clear societal need.
Right. So with the EVE use case, the overarching problem is the critical need for more effective and, importantly, eco-friendly wildfire fighting capabilities.
Okay.
The various scenarios within this use case would involve different geographical locations, diverse environmental conditions, maybe varying intensities of wildfires, lots of variables.
And the objectives.
The primary scenario objectives might include minimizing the total area burnt and the resulting damage, while simultaneously minimizing the operational costs and the environmental impact of the firefighting operations themselves. Balancing acts.
And who would be the key stakeholders in a typical wildfire scenario? Seems like a lot.
Oh, it is. They would range from the firefighters and incident commanders on the front line.
Boots on the ground.
To the manufacturers of the specialized firefighting equipment, aircraft, comms gear, and even the government agencies and regulatory bodies overseeing land management and environmental protection.
And distinguishing primary and secondary.
Primary stakeholders would be those directly and actively involved in working towards the firefighting objectives, like the firefighters, the command teams. Secondary stakeholders might include residents living nearby, owners of the affected land, maybe even European-level environmental regulators concerned with broader ecological consequences.
And their needs, as we've discussed, can be quite varied and sometimes conflicting. A firefighter's primary need might be safety and containment speed.
Absolutely.
While a government agency might also be very concerned about the financial costs and long-term ecological recovery.
Exactly. These differing needs then directly influence how the scenario objectives are prioritized and weighted in the value functions we talked about. For instance, in a scenario where there is an immediate threat to human life and property, the objective of minimizing the burnt area might be given a much higher priority than, say, minimizing emissions from the firefighting aircraft in the short term. You make trade-offs based on context.
Makes sense. And what might be some of the key value indicators, the KVIs, that would be relevant for evaluating the effectiveness of wildfire fighting efforts within this SOAS framework?
Okay, relevant KVIs in this context could be quantifiable metrics, like maybe the measurable change in humidity levels near the ground after an aerial water drop, which affects fire spread.
Okay, quantifiable impact.
Or the rate at which effective fire breaks can be created by ground units, measured in meters per hour, perhaps. Each KVI should ideally link back to at least one of the overarching scenario objectives.
Like fire break rate linking to minimizing burnt area.
Precisely. These KVIs then become crucial for evaluating the relative effectiveness of different proposed SOASO architectures for tackling the wildfire challenge.
And these KVIs then feed into the definition of the global wildfire fighting variables and the associated value functions. How are the often complex scenario objectives actually expressed in a quantifiable way here?
Right. The scenario objectives minimize burnt area, keep costs below, are expressed as quantifiable value functions. These functions incorporate the relevant KVIs as variables and also take into account the various stakeholder needs by assigning them appropriate weighting parameters reflecting those priorities we just discussed.
Okay.
This allows for a comprehensive overall evaluation of different potential SOAS solutions under a range of different environmental conditions and can also be utilized for multi objective optimization to find solutions offering the best balance across all key objectives.
So let's try and wrap this up. We've taken quite a deep dive here into this, the really vital idea of a system of systems and why it's becoming so essential for tackling these big, messy global challenges you hear about all the time. You've hopefully seen it's about understanding the connections, the interdependencies, not just improving bits in isolation.
Yeah, we defined what an SOS actually is, that collection of systems working together for a unique goal. And we went through the benefits it offers you: efficiency, scalability, adaptability, resilience.
We also touched on the challenges, the complexities of actually doing systems engineering, the fact that the methods are still, you know, kind of evolving.
Right. And then we spent a good chunk of time on the Colossus project in Europe, this fascinating effort to directly address those SOASE limitations, specifically within the aviation sector.
You learned about their really ambitious goal to basically revolutionize how we design planes and air services, taking that holistic view, optimizing the aircraft, the operations, and the business models all together.
All using their transformative digital collaborative framework, the TDCF, which builds on that already successful Agile platform.
Ultimately, as you can probably tell, Colossus seems like a really significant step in how we approach these massive engineering problems.
It does. By really embracing this comprehensive system of systems way of thinking, they're aiming to unlock some truly transformative solutions. Solutions that could genuinely shape the future of how we fly for all of us.
And it really gets you thinking, doesn't it? I mean, our world is just so interconnected now. How many other challenges out there? Things that seem totally separate on the surface, like, I don't know, improving healthcare delivery, making agriculture truly sustainable, planning smarter cities. How many of those might benefit from looking at them through this same kind of holistic system of systems lens?
Yeah.
You know, looking beyond just the individual doctors or crops or buildings and focusing instead on how all the pieces interact, How might that help us find unexpected connections, maybe new leverage points, to create real, lasting, transformative change across loads of different fields? Definitely something to chew on. So as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm left with a really compelling question. How might applying this kind of system of systems thinking, with its strong focus on clearly defined capabilities and the often overlooked needs of all stakeholders, how might that fundamentally transform the way we approach other complex problems, maybe in our own professional field or even just in the wider world around us?
That's a great question to ponder.
Perhaps it's about consciously considering the various levels of interaction, those five levels they talked about, and the potential for those often surprising emergent behaviors in the everyday systems we encounter. It's definitely a powerful framework to think with. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.